Right, welcome everybody. We're going to start off today with a guest speaker presentation from Design for America. There's some links in line 96 and 97 for a bit of context. Design for America is one of the winners of the Digital Media and Learning Badges for Lifelong Learning competition. And we were really impressed by their presentation and approach, particularly how they're using digital badges to solve some organizational development problems that they're facing. But also because their badges really tell a story about how design works and about how design thinking works. So with that, let's pass over to, I think we have Daniel and Anya from Design for America. Hey, guys.
Hi. So also with us, we have the Director of Operations from Design for America, Sammy Nuremberg, and also the faculty founder, Liz Gerber. But the presenters will be Jonathan and I.
Great. Are you guys able to share your slides?
You should be able to see it now. No?
No luck?
Oh.
Oh. There you are.
Are we up? Do you see?
We
should be on.
Yep, we can see your screen now.
Okay, great. So this is a slightly shorter version of the pitch we gave. Our future depends on innovation. Innovative work is carried out by those with the expertise and confidence to tackle ill-structured real-world problems. We also depend on undergraduate institutions to supply a pipeline of these innovators. But there are a few opportunities in the undergraduate curriculum where the necessary experiential and collaborative learning is married with guidance to really foster these skills. Design for America is one solution to meet this demand. Design for America is a network of undergrad-led design studios. And when I say design here, I'm not talking about graphic design architecture. I'm talking about design in the sense of the practice of identifying social problems like these, water conservation, or food deserts. Students work with community partners to solve local problems. They're mentored by experienced faculty members, design professionals, and above all, other students within the community. For our students, we're proposing a badge-based project tracking community to better connect and guide our undergraduate innovators. So this is what we do at DFA. There are two main areas of competency that our system is designed to foster: effective design-based practice and constant cross-team collaboration and communication. Effective design for social change is promoted within DFA by three overarching goals: looking locally, creating fervently, and acting fearlessly. Within these overarching values are discrete steps that project teams can take along the way to project completion. Our badge system is designed to encourage the development of these real-world design skills. Badges will be awarded for project teams after uploading evidence to indicate alignment with criteria and completion of these badges. The second area of competency is the disposition to communicate, collaborate, and share stories and successful project practices. This promotes learning between community members. As a result of our work, many students are able to leave education with the ability to innovate and even start their own companies. Hannah and Aaron are helping young diabetics become independent at an earlier age with Jerry the Bear, an interactive teaching toy. Mert and Yuri are reducing hospital-acquired infections, a problem responsible for 100,000 deaths a year, with a unique hand sanitation device. More like these are on the way. However, as DFA grows, there's extra strain on the community. Members of different studios are connected via social media, but the mentorship, reflection, and shared practices that happen far less online than they do within studios. Studios are largely siloed at the moment. Members find it hard to share their projects despite strong interest and need. And this will become more problematic for younger and less experienced studios. We believe that a robust badge system can better connect our community and help us scale to more sites. I'll now pass it over to Jonathan, who will talk more in detail about the badge system that will solve these problems.
Great. Thanks, Dan. So what we're going to do, I guess, is just go through very briefly how we envisioned our design utilizing badges to, again, support the two areas that we're interested in fostering. So that's effective design practice and constant cross-team communication and collaboration. So the way that we had hoped to leverage badges is with two main types of badges. So the first of which is design project tracking badges, and these kind of more closely align with the more traditional sense of learning. So this is based on the kind of stepwise design principles of DFA that we've executed kind of effectively in the past, and it's kind of our way of saying this is what we view as good design practice. So the other thing that we find significant about this type of badge is that it also allows clear recognition for the expertise of everyone in the community. So it really allows for a great system of mentorship, so people can see the expertise that's visible through other people's projects and other people's accomplishments, and that aids in scalability because it's a good way for mentors to kind of get in contact with each other in a way that might not necessarily be the case otherwise. So the other type of bags that we're envisioning are identity badges, and so these are primarily kind of community-driven, user-created, user-approved badges. And so we think that as an organization, these beggars are really great because it helps us to see what the community values and what they're kind of recognizing in their other members and their peers, and we can maybe use that to inform our own instruction, curriculum, or practice. So I guess what we'll do is just kind of briefly go through some very initial wireframes so you can see kind of what we're envisioning. So what we have here is a profile page, and so you can see and track the progress. And so we think that this is really great because it not only helps one to kind of validate and recognize their own accomplishments, but it's really great for recognizing the expertise of others as well as kind of seeing where people are. So it helps to kind of set and plan goals so you can see where you are and kind of where you need to go. This page is an example of this criteria page, so you can see what we view as good design practice. You can upload evidence to show that in the real world you have done this in your project, and that leads to this great mentoring interaction between community members. And so we think that that's really great as an organization because it allows there's so many people who have expertise, and so it really helps to share the knowledge, and you can see what other people have done and give helpful feedback on that. Quickly go through again, mentioning the identity badges. The thing that we have here, so we're looking at a profile page. So here, other members in the community are going to be able to see each badge, both in the project tracking badges as well as the identity badges that an individual member has earned. So that if they wanted to get in contact with this person to help with their project or to get some advice on the little subtleties that this person has been recognized for, that's very allowable and encouraged within our system. Just this table that we have here kind of shows how these two types of badges cover the two main competencies that we're hoping to foster with this community system. So to kind of bring it home, we think that in the end we've kind of taken the challenges that we face as an organization and with the design of our system, kind of turned them into great advantages for DFA. So the first is that we feel that we're leveraging a very unique digital media infrastructure to support student learning and guidance of student design work. Secondly, we feel like we've conceived of a great new way or space for our community to grow and for our members to share with and learn from each other. And we also feel like we'd be setting up not only a great way for members to recognize the accomplishments of each other, but I think this really gets at the heart of one of the reasons that I think Mozilla is kind of going full steam with this badge initiative, is that we'd be setting up a fantastic way for potential employers and future partners and collaborators to see the great accomplishments of our users as well as see the great work that's been done in order to get there. And lastly, I think something that we're kind of excited about is we feel that our system is kind of unique in that it's a way that it can be used as a potential model for other communities of practice or organizations who are struggling to expand, to find a great way to carve out an online space where the community can continue to grow by their own merits within a system that supports low-cost, highly sustainable expansion. in the end, what we're envisioning is really a system that draws together and fosters a generation of innovators who will go on to solve our most pressing problems. And we think that we'd love to kind of work with the support of Mozilla and the Badge community to make this a reality.
Thank you for listening.
Thanks so much, guys. There's lots of questions in the Etherpad if you want to have a look at line 120 and below. So the first question up was, you know, have you instances where students have successfully worked through all 8 steps of the process? And is there confusion in terms of understanding the difference between each of those steps?
So we're trying to figure out, can you repeat that one more time?
Oh, sure. So do you have any instances of cases where students have successfully worked through all 8 steps of the badge process?
So the 2 ones that we showed you there, the Hannah and Aaron and Yuri, are probably our 2 most advanced projects. So DFA is 4 years old, 3 and a bit years old. And sort of those are in incubators. We actually have an incredible success rate of our students who do go for incubators. They tend to get within incubators. So they are currently looking for funding. Mert and Yuri are currently looking for funding for Swipe Stamps.
Tomorrow they're going for $1 million in investment. Pitching to angel investors tomorrow for $1 million.
This is Professor Liz Gerber, our faculty founder.
Sorry, could you repeat that? We didn't hear it.
Tomorrow they're pitching to angel investors tomorrow for upwards of $1 million in downtown Chicago.
Okay, sorry, we missed the first part. So could you just sort of give us a bit of context?
The context is that this group, Mert and Yuri, just graduated from university about 8 months ago, and they are currently Design for America Fellows, which means they're working on producing their hand sanitation device. They're in an incubator in downtown Chicago right now and pitching to angel investors tomorrow to raise upward of $1 million to continue manufacturing of their products. They're doing testing in hospitals.
Oh, I see. So you're saying that this 8-step process that Design for America has developed has some obvious kind of early success stories behind it.
That's what we're saying, yeah. So we have two startups coming out right now, and these are both recent grads of university. They were sophomores when they started, and now they're 22 years old.
Cool. So some more questions in the pad. How will the identity badge system grow as individuals and groups develop identity badges? And can students suggest their own identity badges? So is what you guys have presented, do you think that's kind of like an early set that will grow over time? And will students be able to suggest new badges themselves?
Yeah, so I think that's the only way. The identity badges kind of at their core are user-created. So everyone has the ability to create a badge that they would suggest criteria for, and so they would nominate other people in the community and kind of point to the evidence that person has kind of uploaded. And then it would go for a vote to make sure that the badges do have some legitimacy. Once kind of that badge is approved, that kind of goes into the badge ecosystem where anyone else can nominate any other community member after this badge has been kind of recognized by the community as something that is valued and something that they want other people to be recognized for.
And what's the socioeconomic background of participants in Design for America? Is there kind of general profile?
It was originally designed... my personal bias was I was, as a kid, I didn't have the money to travel to work on projects. I had to work at summer jobs. And so it was intentionally designed as an opportunity that students could work on throughout the year. In terms of, so that was the design intention of the program, is that you wouldn't have to, you could still have a part-time job as a student, take your classes, and participate. In terms of socioeconomic status of the groups right now, we are drawing from the universities at which we are hosted, so that can say something about it. We are currently not asking for the standing of the students. We're trying to figure out a sensitive way of getting that information effectively, but we don't have that right now. Yeah, and to just on that question, so as Liz said, we don't keep track of the student's socioeconomic status, although I think some conclusions can be made based on the colleges and universities we work with, although I think we would want to be sensitive with those assumptions. So right now we're at UCLA, Stanford, University of Oregon, Northwestern, Cornell, Dartmouth, Rissy Brown, and Barnard and Columbia.
That's great. Well, thanks so much for the presentation, guys. We're running a bit short on time. Maybe I'll just open it up if anybody wants to ask a question or make a final comment. It's *7 to unmute. Any thoughts or questions?
Hey, this is Carla. I just want to say congratulations for making it all the way through the competition, and we're really excited about your badge system and can't wait to see it start to move out into the real world and see how people use it and the way that it gets to feed back into the system.
Thank you, Carla.
And guys, there's a lot more questions that we actually didn't get a chance to put to you in the Etherpad, so I don't know if you can maybe dive into some of those and just kind of continue the conversation there. And we can use that as a fodder for the blog post that we're going to do on your presentation.
Sure. Sounds good.
Great. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Matt.
So,
thank you.
Let's push ahead. Open Badges is launching beta. What's new and improved? Aaron, are you going to tell us about this?
Hello. Yes, I can. I will introduce it, and Sunny and Carla can jump in if I miss anything. But basically, we're in staging, and we're going to move to production towards the end of this week of what we're calling the public beta of Open Badges, Open Badge Infrastructure. And that involves a few things, a few major new features. One is an improved issuer API, which essentially provides the tools for, or the basically the interface for issuers to, once they issue a badge to a user, for the user to actually have control to then push the badge to the OBI. So it's a pop-up that we control that an issuer easily calls on their site. And then the user actually gets the option to, once they accept the badge, to then push it to the OBI. So that's an awesome thing from a privacy and a privacy perspective. So again, the user is in complete control of where their badges go, and it also makes it easy for the user to put a different backpack in at that time, so that they can actually be managing or hosting their own backpacks. So again, it's making it easier for this to be a much more kind of open environment. There's also some additional backpack management features, just streamlining the backpack, making it easy to make groups of badges and publish groups of badges. There's the initial displayer API, which is on the other side of the ecosystem that allows badges to be shared across various display sites. And then a big one, which, you know, huge kudos to Carla for pushing through, are the legal and privacy requirements. So we have terms of use, a legal FAQ, and a privacy policy, and this was obviously all brand new stuff, not only for Mozilla but for the world in general, because there is no legal precedence around badges, and so this involved a lot of work, and so it's great that we have that now, and also kudos to obviously the rest of the team, the developers Brian and Mike and Chris McAvoy, and then Sunny for really pulling together a bunch of the documentation. And that's another thing that's not here actually is that there's a whole new set of documentation that really is aimed at really making this more self-service and easier to plug in and to utilize the system. How are we spreading the word? So, again, we are really kind of kicking off the Screaming from the Mountaintops early next week, and that will involve a press release that we're working with Matt on, and there's some notes there in that Etherpad. There'll be a Mozilla-wide email, as well as emails through all of our mailing lists and channels. We're all going to blog about it, and then obviously hit up the Twitter. So we really would appreciate people helping us get the word out next week. And then there's a list here of how you can get involved. We have a community call, a Google group mailing list, and we have our GitHub set up now to really also funnel in some developer contribution as well.
That's great. Thanks, Erin. Mm-hmm. So any questions on Open Badges beta? Greg Wilson is asking anything OBI. Greg, are you there? Do you want to ask a question?
Here.
Oh, Greg's right here. Sorry. Greg, you have a question?
Open mic.
Yep.
Just a heads up that the deadline for Google Summer of Code student proposals is coming up real fast. I know that Open Badges was put together too late to get accepted as a GSOC project in its own right. Can we keep our eyes out for proposals that are related to the infrastructure that Chris and others are relying on and start to pull those students in, maybe bend them towards meeting our needs? I'm happy to do a first pass through proposals once they're accepted. We're expecting about 1,000, but a couple of keyword searches should spot some people that Chris could point in the right direction.
Yep. Okay. That would be awesome. We'd love to do that.
Cool. Any other questions about Open Badges beta launch?
One from me. The terms of use legal FAQ, is that U.S.-centric for the moment, or is it covering the EU, Australia, Canada?
It's U.S.-centric at the moment, and then the lawyers have it on their radar to build in the kind of more global stuff probably over the next 3 months.
Okay. We've got way more traction for software carpentry in Europe than anywhere else, like 3X or 4X.
Yep.
Having something there by end of June would be helpful, or at least just knowing if there's anything I have to worry about by end of June would be helpful.
Okay. Yeah, so I mean, it's definitely on their radar, and the thing, everything is written right now in a way to be as inclusive as possible. But then, obviously, as we all know, there's kind of more sort of specific things that that we need to make sure that are in there for some of the more global stuff. So, but it is on their radar, and yeah, we can. I know your deadline is June, and so we can talk to them about seeing if that's possible.
Hello, can you guys hear me?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Oh, super. It's worked this time. Brilliant. I'm sorry to kind of drag things back. I failed to unmute myself at the right moment. Summer of Code. Someone said something about Summer of Code, which kind of confused me because I'm the Mozilla administrator for Summer of Code. There's like one proposal from the foundation, but he was talking about searching for proposals which covered our infrastructure and stuff. But can you say that again? Because I think there's confusion about this.
Is this Gervais?
Yeah, speaking.
Okay, I'll chat offline.
Okay, the point is right that we have a list of things that people are looking at and applying for. But there's like one thing from the foundation on the list, which is about slides or something, and nothing else. And people can't apply for.
Sounds like a good conversation to follow up offline. So let's
push
ahead.
Okay.
Thanks, Sharon. Cool. So let's hand over to Brett. Brett. I hear there was some kind of big popcorn learning lab type event in London. What happened and what did we learn from it? Brett, are you there, Brett? Star 7.
Hello, hello. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Okay, I figured it out. Hello.
Hello.
How is everybody?
Dude, we vibe.
Good. So last Sunday, we did a popcorn learning lab in the new office in London, which is great. It's a really nice space. It's inside, it's definitely rivaling the San Francisco office minus an amazing bridge. And we set up an Eventbrite, Michelle and I, and like within about a couple of days, it was actually full. So we didn't know if that was a good thing or a bad thing. And it was really, the weather was beautiful in London. So we didn't know if anybody was going to show because it was scheduled for a Sunday at 11 a.m. And it was really great. About 30 people showed up. We had a really good mix of people. We had made, in Eventbrite, you sort of make categories of people. So we said, like 30 JavaScript developers and 30 Brave filmmakers, I think we called it. And so only 30 people showed up in total, which is totally normal for these free kind of events. But I think that they actually broke down pretty evenly along those lines. So we had like a 16-year-old kid from Goldsmiths College hacking and arguing with somebody from Ridley Scott's production company. We had people come all the way from Amsterdam, which kind of blew our mind. Lots of real range of kind of skill sets and ages, and I must say genders, although there was only two genders represented, but it was definitely a nice diverse group. So I made a blog post about it. You can basically see what we did. We basically tried to get started right away, and we had Brian Churls and Cole Gillespie there, who sort of took the folks who were knew JavaScript before coming through the process of creating a popcorn plugin, of using the library, and then I worked with folks who had never done any code, and we used Popcorn Maker, but the same Popcorn Maker that's been there for months, so it was quite it's still quite a rusty piece of software, but people really charged through it. One thing that we did this time was, I should be doing some screen sharing. So one thing that we did is we all worked with a...
You are sharing your screen right now. You realize that, right?
I know, but I'm just like moving it up and down. It's not very exciting. So we all used the same piece of content. We used this film, this series called Everything is a Remix. And so here is one example over here of something that people made. So this is somebody that came from British Telecom, which was kind of cool. He had just heard about popcorn and wanted to use it. And what he did is made a custom plugin. I'm going to play it. And it basically takes a screen grab of the video on the left and then makes a collage of it on the screen on the right. So he made a custom popcorn plugin that does that. So this is kind of an example of what people were doing in the side of the room that knew how to code. On the other side, with
Brad.
The...
Hey, Brad.
Yeah.
So could you just explain that one more time? So what we're seeing is, still frames pulled out of the video and appearing in the montage on the right?
Yeah. So you see this video over here on the left, and then as it plays, it samples the video and says, take a screen grab of that and then populate this collage over here on the right. So he was just sort of experimenting with different canvas functions and things, but it uses popcorn to do that.
Very cool.
Here, on this side, this is a woman named Kat who works at the Salvation Army in the UK, and she uploaded her own video to Popcorn Maker, and she wanted to sort of annotate it. So she actually sort of hacked our pop-up video template to... This guy here is a member of Parliament, and he had attended an event, and so she figured out how to get a picture of him, display that when he came on screen, and then this actually links out to his Twitter page. And then she realized that it would be great if, as they're watching the video, you could have a click to donate button, which makes a lot of sense for there it happens. Ooh, click to donate as you're watching the film that comes up for the Salvation Army. We had quite a few young people. In the UK, they have this program called Young Rewired State, which generally the participants use public data, public British data, to do hack days. We had some of those young people come, and they teamed up with another young guy. And this is actually, you can try this. If everybody could try this mock-up that I have here, go into the Etherpad and this third, where is it, the second link that says Popcorn Comments. He uses a technology called WebSockets so that as you're watching this film, you could say, I'm Brett, and then what it'll do is add a comment to the page at that point. So now I've added one that you should be able to see. There, at the bottom, it'll add that. This is cool because it allows for sort of decentralized commenting. Everybody can come from a different place and add that. So these are kind of like three examples of the types of things that we made. This was all done in a day. And we actually had not put the emphasis, as we do with our larger events, on, you know, sprinting to the finish line on a product. We really just wanted people to sort of tinker with the library. So we were actually quite pleasantly surprised that there were some sort of real things that came out of the day. And as far as, you know, what we sort of learned that we want to apply to the next one of these, first is that, you know, we want to do it again. I think we could totally be doing this as much to the capacity as we have, which there was one point that we sort of, I'm not sure if we failed, but it didn't do exactly what we had hoped, was that we kind of cloned Michelle and myself and other Popcorn community members so that these events could pop up on their own. We had just had people who really wanted to get there and learn, less so in terms of like facilitator training. I also kind of, I feel that that's something that potentially we need. In the early days of Drumbeat, Gunnar would sort of have these facilitator training days where you kind of learn how to do a bit of that. And it's something that I realized sort of three quarters of the way through the event is that, like, hey, I've been indoctrinated. I know how to do this, but how do I pass that on to other people? That's something I would have loved to be able to, like, identify who in the room would want to do that, send them to a place that they could go to learn how to do this, and then keep in touch with them by email or Skype or whatever and keep this going. So the sort of teach to fish, I think, could happen, but it's not, we didn't necessarily nail that in the day. We also, I think, we really would like to figure out popcorn exercises. We got 75% of the way there in that we created this sort of boilerplate page that anybody can download and sort of start their work there. And that's actually why we got any demos at all, because we had that. But I think we could take that further in some sort of game that everybody plays or something. But we were so kind of wrapped up in the mechanics of producing the event that we didn't really have time to do that. What else did we learn? I think we learned that we need people to go away with kind of a manual of everything that they've learned. But generally, we really... Oh, and the final thing was that we chose to say, like, those who've done JavaScript, you know, work with Brian and Cole, those who haven't, come work with Brett. And I think that was a necessary thing to do, but we need to find a way to sort of bring those people back together as quickly as possible, because they all told us in our closing circle that they would have liked to have done that. You know, they were sort of talking over lunch, and we had everybody do these paper prototypes and things, and, you know, some of the developers were like, hey, I want to work on that thing that person described over there. How do I do that? I don't necessarily want to just make a plugin. And some of them did that on their own, which is great. But I think we need to sort of bake that into our planning process. So that's the event.
Thanks so much, Brett. We're going to push ahead, but there's plenty of questions still underlined 192, so maybe you can keep the conversation going there and answer some of those questions. And,
cool.
And also hoping, I realize nobody really made copious notes as you were talking about your key learnings, so if somebody could help flesh those out under what did we learn, that would be helpful as well. Cool. Well, let's push ahead to summer campaign update. Ben Simon, rumor has it we have a new wiki website. Tell us about it.
I have heard that too. Am I shared?
Yes, you are. You are shared.
All right. So thanks largely to the heroic work of Matt Thompson. Well, that's weird.
Beautiful, isn't it? You have to remove the dash.
Yeah. There we go. So we have now a sort of shadow website in waiting. My sharing stopped. Okay, try again. We have sort of a new what the hell is going on? Whatever. The link is in the Etherpad, so if I continue to get dropped, I'll just talk through it. But so there's basically a great portal that you can soon point people to. We're hoping by the end of the week for this to be something that we're actually more than happy to have out in the wide world and not the not just the maker call world. But the basic idea is to split up into a bunch of different sort of sub-categories and sub-pages. So in addition to the main sign-up form that you can get to in that very top bit, we have pages about what is happening, when. We have pages about how you can get involved, although those are actually mostly coming soon links. And then we are working on some, on what we're calling a partner kit, which would be something that can be easily sort of shared so that we could pass it on to, you know, anyone who could potentially partner, whether it's a sort of big Tumblr-type thing who would be running sort of their own events and we'd be plugging in, or if it's somebody just sort of plugging into our stuff, or even somebody who would just be promoting it. There's a lot of great stuff, and this should hope to... We're hoping this will really flesh out what we're talking about and give people something where they can just take a look and easily sort of grok what's going on. And there's also an FAQ and roadmap and planning, which are certainly the FAQ is in large part answered in all the other pages. And also Matt found the most Justin Bieber-like person to feature. He's trying to appeal to the kids, I think.
Purely accidental, I promise.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So I can certainly walk through each individual page, but I feel like it's mostly sort of stuff that'd be great for people to take a look at on the side and be ready to send it out to your people once it's finished.
That's great. And so, Ben, you're saying that the goal is to have this ready for partners and ready for a more general audience by the end of this week?
Yes, indeed.
Cool. And I guess we'll talk in more detail about that in the summer campaign call, which Aaron, I believe, is happening right after this call.
That is correct, yes.
Cool. Any questions about the summer campaign website wiki before we push ahead? Sounds like no. So let's pass over to Lainey to tell us about Taskosaurus. Lainey, are you there? Star 7. Hello, Lainey. I heard a breath, but no voice. Lainey, are you there? Going once? Oh. Double mute. Star 7 to unmute. We'll come back to you, Lainey. Let's push ahead. Alina, you wanted to ask a bit about our next steps around localization. Are you there? Star 7.
Hello.
Hi, Lena.
Hi. Quick answer regarding localization, because I saw that it was a topic a few weeks ago. So I think that after discussing with other localizers, I think that the localization translation, for example, in the case of Hakazaurus, is going very well. So probably the best is to let the process unfold naturally, because we need now actually more solutions to make localization simple. So Hakazaurus website tool is actually the best example of a simple localization process. And my next point, and I think that it's the most important, is on how to focus actually to bring the webmaker culture we are trying to build locally in more cities. In Barcelona, for example, it's happening a lot of things around web makers. We will have three popcorn hack jams in the next three months. Would be great to have seeing this in more cities. And I think that Mozilla can Mozilla community can help with this. For example, the reps. So probably trying to think on how to build a support volunteer network for the summer campaign, for example, would help finding more people to help spread the web maker share web making in their cities. So
I was just going to mention that Ryan has been trying to answer some of your questions in the Etherpad. I don't know, Ryan, do you want to speak up a bit?
All I was going to say is I think there's two pieces to it. One is building the community around it, which, Alina, you're already showing some or a lot of leadership in that area. And I think the other piece is about having the infrastructure to support it. Atul and Jess have been working through the bits to make that possible for Hackasaurus, and also the rest of Mozilla has done lots of work around doing effective L10N, and they've been trying to fix the things that people have felt are broken. So I think there's some learning there. I'd be happy to have the software team dig into how you build sites for L10N, and I think we already know a chunk of it, and I think systematizing it is the next piece. And it seems like an opportune moment to mention that the software calls will be public starting on April the 13th, so I'm happy to put it on a future agenda to start that discussion and learn from what's working and maybe bring somebody from MoCo L10N to talk about their system. It might be a bit too weapons grade for what we need, but I think there's probably some learning there about process at the very least and infrastructure. So I'm willing to commit to that piece on the technical piece, and then I think there's another part about building communities and allowing L10N to be driven by interested people. My experience has been that when you kind of roll out of bed and say, hey, we should have this in 20 languages, it's very frustrating. But when you empower a community that comes forward and says, we want this thing in our language, and you give them the tools and they support them, that can be very successful, which is, I think, what you've been doing, Alina, and I think it's what happened.
Yeah, exactly.
Ended up in translating to the language that's in is that people are compelled by it, and so they're moved to translate. I think that's what we need to foster.
Yep.
Great. Thanks for driving, Alina.
Yeah, thanks, Alina. It's great. Okay, so let's circle back to Lainey. Lainey, are you there?
Yes. Can you hear me now?
I can hear you now.
I'm so sorry. Apologies.
Oh, no worries. So what's Hackasaurus?
So Hackasaurus is a Hive project that we've been working on in partnership with Mouse and the After School Corporation, which is TASC for short. And essentially the goals of the project were to help increase digital literacy and interest in STEM, to motivate community educators, and then through that to create a model that we could then scale to other after school programs. So you might remember a few weeks ago, Zainab joined our call and talked about her workshop that she participated in with Jeff. And then she was also featured a week or so ago in the engagement email, which she was very excited about, so thank you. So her involvement was really the first phase of this project. So she and other students that are part of Mouse participated in the workshop with Jeff, and they then became Hackasaurus Hack Jam facilitators. And then just a week ago, they helped to facilitate a session with some after-school coordinators through TASC. And there were about 17 participants. They were from public schools in Brooklyn and the Bronx. And you'll see online 242, there's a link to our blog, which gives a pretty good overview of the session. And then over the next 2 months, those coordinators are going to be hosting the hack jams at their schools with students, and then the youth facilitators will be participating and co-facilitating those as well. And then together, we're going to be developing a STEM-focused version of the Hacktivity Kit. So just wanted to give a quick update and keep you posted on what Zainab and her peers are working on, and then you can follow our blog. We'll be posting more updates in the coming months.
Fantastic. Thank you, Lainey. Any questions or comments for Lainey? Sounds like no. So just pose your questions in the pad and check out Lainey's blog post on line 244. Somebody want to do a shout-out about BetaFest in London on April 10th? Leah, I wasn't sure if you wanted to talk about this or whether it's just a nonverbal update. Leah, are you there? There's a link to the BetaFest website in line 275, or you can get in touch with Leo from Remo if you're interested in learning more about BetaFest. We have some new members of our team to welcome. Aaron, do you want to start us off?
Sure. So the first person that, or I guess the person I'm welcoming is Chloe Veralidi, who just started yesterday, although it feels like she's been on the team for a long time because she's been sort of poking her head in and out of the community, but she is the curriculum game and assessment designer in the learning group and comes to us from P2PU, where she built badges and assessments there and also worked at Quest to Learn, and so it has a bunch of game design and embedded assessment experience. So we're super, super excited to have her on the team. She's working out of the London office for now, and will be out of New York later this year, but for now she's in the London office. So anyway, welcome, Chloe, and I'm super excited again to have you on the team.
And if I could just throw in, Aaron, Chloe's been doing some really amazing illustrations around the whole learning challenge process for P2PU, including some stuff around the Open Badges infrastructure. It's very beautiful work. I'd encourage everybody to take a look at it. I'll put a link to Chloe's work on the Etherpad. Ryan, you had somebody you want to
watch? Yes, so I'd like to welcome Kate Hudson, who is here with us in Toronto and joining us as the Foundation's first intern. And she'll be joining us working on UI and UX, primarily around popcorn templates. Lots of you have seen her amazing work, which is why she's here with us now. We're super excited to have her joining us until August. Welcome, Kate.
Thank you.
Yay. Very cool. Okay, let's see what's left. Some nonverbal updates to have a look at in the pad, line 290 and below. Cool. So that takes us to what we want to make noise about in Monday's all-hands meeting. So I'm going to actually try something a little different this week. So I'm going to start by asking Mark, for example, do you think there's anything that was covered in this call that we should bring to the attention of the Mozilla community on Monday? And then beyond that, I thought we would have a go at scheduling some lightning talks for upcoming meetings.
Yeah, so I think that OBI beta is the one. But I think that also it is now 11:53, and you know, probably by the time we get to the end of these, it's hard to come up with stuff. So I like the idea of scheduling these lightning talks in advance, and I think OBI we can go ahead and do on Monday if the team is willing. But what we might do is actually come up with a schedule that has dates against it for those and other things. It'd be good to see open news in there. I don't know that the rest of Mozilla knows who the fellows are, where they are, what they're working on. And there's, you know, lots of other things. Certainly the summer campaign is in there. There's lots of other stuff that we've been building there on a regular basis. So my proposal would be we do OBI on Monday, but we also come back with a proposed schedule this week, next week, and look at it every week.
Cool. That sounds good. So in particular, why don't we set a date for a lightning talk around summer campaign and Mozilla Festival? So we'll coordinate with folks offline and review the proposed schedule in next week's call. Cool. Sounds good. And so Open Badges team, are you able to do like a quick, you know, 3 to 5 minute lightning talk on the OBI beta for this coming Monday?
Yeah. Yep.
Very cool. Well, let's have a quick look at what else is upcoming in the calendar. Talked about BetaFest. Data Transparency Weekend with the Wall Street Journal. I don't know, is anybody from the Open News team here who can speak to that really briefly? It sounds interesting. I think Dan Sinker is PTO this week.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, I encourage people to check it out, and we'll include it in our weekly update blog post. All right, well, that takes us to pretty close to the top of the hour. Any final items or announcements or questions before we wrap up? Oh, Cole Gillespie, did you have something you wanted to say? It's *7 to unmute. Cole, does that work for you? All right. Well, Cole, we're hoping you can come back next week to present your Call Me demo. So hopefully we'll have a chance to chat then. All right. Thanks for a great call, everybody. And so, Aaron, are we just going to – are those folks who are participating in the summer campaign call, should they just stay on and we'll roll straight into that one?
Yeah, that works.
Okay. All right. So we'll let everybody else drop off. Summer campaign folks, stick around. Thanks for a great call. Talk to you all next week. Bye, everybody. Hey, Aaron.
Hi.
Do we have an agenda or something we should be looking at?
Yeah. I'll put it in the Foundation Etherpad, or Foundation Etherpad.
Cool.
So do we have everybody?
I think so. Let's see. In Etherpad, I see Ben Simon, Chris Appleton, you, Jess, Ross, and Ryan. Mark is here as well.
Okay. So the Etherpad has essentially the same kind of buckets that we talked about last week, and I don't know if, based on Ryan and Mark's availability, if there's any piece that you guys want to jump into first. Out of event design, platform, communications, branding, partnerships, or learning?
Maybe. No, I'm happy to stay for the whole thing. I mean, partnerships and coffee are the two things I want to talk about.
Okay. Well, I think the first two, event design and platform, should be pretty fast, so we can just kind of move through in linear order. But so on the event design, Michelle's still on vacation. She's back end of this week. But she kicked off the beta testing, and I was wondering if anybody had any feedback so far. I think she said to report it directly back to her, but just wondering if anybody had actually run beta tests or heard anything so far. I'm guessing the answer is no. Okay. I think she has the feedback funneling through her, but we did talk about – oh, I didn't finish that sentence we did talk about doing another round of beta testing at the end of the month. So basically there's these 2 weeks. We'll have a call, I think, on April 17th, a debrief call, and then do another week of beta testing where we have some prototypes of at least one of the missions. And it may be that that's a super rough, even papery type of prototype, but just to get a little right now we're testing like event design and that way we can build in some of the testing the learning pieces as well. So Jess is working towards that date. The two other pieces on event design, well, one is just the evaluation we talked about last week. So I know we might definitely want to get our hands in some of the questions, the follow-up questions and surveys, but Ben, you said that was pretty easy, so we'll check back in a few weeks. And then the other one is just, I was copied on an email from Michelle, and I guess I wasn't aware of this, but there's the kitchen table coders out there, so she had emailed them to find out if they want to participate and how they feel about us using the name. And so they had responded and said they were interested in hearing more, basically. So that's...
Can I interrupt on that? Like,
yeah,
we didn't take
yeah.
that name from them. It's a pretty standard idea of doing kitchen table meeting. I think I saw that, and I think that's the wrong question to have asked them.
Yeah.
And certainly if they did push back, we kind of teed that up, but I don't think it matters. Like, we're not proposing capital K, capital T, and they don't own that concept.
Yep.
So
okay.
That's a minor
yep.
point, but I think
yep.
that's kind of important.
Okay.
Yeah,
I
definitely had concerns about the amount of branding they seemed to be thinking we would be reasonable to get from us, if that makes sense. And their response is like, as long as we're very prominently everywhere.
Yeah, no, it's ridiculous.
Right. Yeah, okay, I totally agree. I mean, now that Michelle has sort of explicitly asked, does that change anything?
No.
Okay.
I mean, I think we have to deal with it more gingerly and back out of it. Like, not back out of it, but just, I mean, we fucked up. And so we have to deal with them accordingly. But I don't think that, I think we did fuck up and we should just manage it and not give them too much or not overreact if they're concerned.
Yep. Okay. Okay, so moving on to platform, updates from Ross. Are you there, Ross? Okay.
Are we on 7?
I don't know.
People need to hit star 7 to unmute.
Yeah, you're on, Jess.
Okay. I was just wondering if maybe other people had that problem. I was just trying to get on.
Okay. Well, it looks like he's typing stuff in here anyway. So Ross sent around the MVP of the platform last week. Are there any questions around that? I thought it looked pretty straightforward.
So that's specifically the event page.
The conference has been unmuted.
Hello.
Oh, hey, Ross.
Hello.
Okay.
No idea why, but whenever I'm on this call, Skype Star 7 never, ever, 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 ever works. But it's working now, so that's good. As you say, I've outlined the MVP doc, and I've put it in each pad so people can comment on it, ask about it. I emailed, I think, the whole group last week. I think it's pretty decent and pretty sound. Updates, we have dev starting this week, or started on Monday. Michelle found a contractor in Berlin called Max. He seems very cool. And very nice. So what we're looking at currently is just working on getting the main infrastructure up and running, get it working on my machine, his machine, and we're looking to basically get people, we're allowing like the simple functionality. So people are going to be allowed to tell us about events that they've already run. So like this is include a URL to your event, description, name, organizer. And from there, we're going to look at then putting it in our database, displaying them on maps, which will then allow us to do the sort of like the location-based searching, which will be quite cool. And while he's doing that, I'm looking at the BSD side of things, just seeing what it can do, what it can't do, what styling options we have. That's liaising quite a lot at the moment with our contact there, Seth. So that would be cool. But yeah, it's looking fairly good, and hopefully we should have something up on the URL fairly soon. We're planning for like early next week. Maybe before, but we're thinking early next week is going to be the better chance.
Ross, when people write those reports about the events they've already run, how are people going to discover those reports or get a feel for what's going on?
Yep, cool. So in the Etherpad, we've sort of got roughly what we're looking at. So it's going to be essentially it's their way to hack an event into our database. We're going to be pretty much scraping, oh, damn it. Sorry about that.
So, Team Ross, private Etherpen.
Okay, should be public now.
Great.
Is that our call?
Yeah, it's working.
Okay, sweet. So, yeah, essentially what we're doing is we're going to aggregate all the events into our own database. Like, it was nice thinking of using BSD, but the problem is that as we're also looking to have sort of community-based events involved, if they don't use BSD, there was no way that they could search the BSD system to find them. So we're going to aggregate them all ourselves and then provide a search system through there. So we're sort of going to, we can highlight our own events, but we're also sort of having everything in the one system. So everyone can search it, everyone can be displayed, depending on campaigns, depending on all that sort of stuff. Excuse me.
But if, in order to discover that something happened, do I need to go run a search, or it's being pushed to me by Twitter, or there's a stream somewhere, or that I'm thinking specifically of, like, the media experience of somebody seeing this stuff and, like, how they'll get a feel for what's going on?
Okay. So, obviously, we're going to have, like, our up-to-date, sort of a list of however many we want on home pages and stuff. We're going to probably, depending on design, go with like a map-style motif of showing sort of on the globe roughly what's going on. RSS feed, I think, is something that we probably should provide. So we're looking so we can, you know, people can subscribe to a list of events, which would be cool. So hopefully we're looking at multiple ways that people can find out what's going on with what we're up to. So then MVP perspective, we're looking at people coming to a campaign page and finding the stuff from there. We're also providing a cert so people can look, maybe if it doesn't do a geolocation to show them where they are for events near them or for specific names, keywords. So there should be numerous ways people would find out about stuff going on.
Okay. Good. Thanks. That's helpful.
Hi. I'm a little confused about how this relates to the Make site. I mean, I think it's just probably because I haven't seen like what the latest version of the Make site is going to be. And the reason I'm asking mainly is because as I'm building out the missions, I'm not really totally sure where they're going to be in relationship to some of the other components like the website and like the web maker tools.
Have a look at hopefully another public pad. So that's sort of how it ties in with Make. So I've got a Make Etherpad and a Make Events Etherpad, which hopefully should outline that a little bit better.
I mean, everything's going to be interlinked, so I don't totally understand why it necessarily matters where the missions are. I mean, obviously we need a home for them, but I would assume those are there's links out to that available from within the creating an event or event page.
I don't think it matters. Right. It doesn't really matter specifically for the event page, like it's going to be linked out to, but it's kind of like my understanding of where different components are so that I can build it. Yeah. So I can contextualize where my stuff is going, our stuff is going. But this helps.
Yep.
I'm going to read through this, though, so I think maybe I'll check back with Ross offline.
Okay. And then on line 30, just then so I'm coming from quite a, I don't know what the right word is, lengthy span of work with Legal on the open badges stuff, and I know that is different and there wasn't any precedent there, but we kind of went through the normal channels of filling out the forms, and then it sort of, we had to work pretty hard to just get a dedicated resource to just help us and like really understand what we're trying to do and get us all the stuff that we needed in time for beta launch, and so that is my only experience with
by dedicated resource, do you mean the idea would be getting someone from the Legal team who is,
yes. Yeah.
Like a sign up. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I think if getting that would not be bad at all.
I think the other piece that is different here is that we're building this on top of Blue State Digital, which has already been through the gauntlet of security and privacy review. They've already signed Mozilla's privacy addendum. They're PCI level compliant. They're basically weapons grade security. And to be honest, they're more secure than Mozilla's own servers. So I think we've already, so we're, you know, three fifths of the way there already.
Is the only, I don't know if this is a Ben question or a Ross question, but is the only like actual user information like PII in BSD, or are we putting anything
no.
in user information in our own database?
There's a whole bunch in our, we're creating our own database, essentially.
We're creating our own stuff. It's largely going to be, from a user perspective, it's going to be an email. It's going to be as minimal information as possible from there using browser ID. So we're hoping it should be enough known parts to, again, make it pretty safe and secure. You know, we're using Play-Doh. We're using browser ID. They're things that people use and people are aware of, IT are aware of, security are aware of. So hopefully we should be covering our back enough.
And it's using Mozilla's existing browser ID.
Yes, exactly. And also their application framework called Play-Doh.
Yeah.
So there should be enough known parts to make it fairly secure out of the box.
Okay, thanks.
So I guess, Mark and Ryan, is my concern sort of like off base? Should we just let it go through the regular process, or should we try to reach out to Harvey or Jashim or something?
I wouldn't reach out to Harvey. It might be worth having a brief conversation with James Murdoch. Harvey just doesn't have the bandwidth, and I would not become unconcerned about it. I don't think it's going to be as hard as that. That's all.
Yeah, I mean, I have already been talking. Like, I've already talked with Jishnu and Stacey Martin about this stuff, and so, like, nothing seems terribly problematic in talking to them. And I think that, like, in my mind, the next step is just now that we have actually sort of much further along with these etherpads for all this stuff, just getting that to them and like. That plus the data safety process that's underway and just sort of seeing where that is.
The most important thing for all of this is having a clear work back on when this stuff needs to be done and locked down and being hard ass about it with them that like this has to be done by May X and pushing them to make sure that these things happen on time because our June dates are real and so we can't be hung up by this stuff.
Okay. Great. So moving on to communications and branding. So one of the questions that we talked about Michelle had mentioned that she thought we needed to hire a photographer and get some pictures of people teaching around the kitchen table from the beta testing to use in the campaign. Matt had shared the Flickr account with a bunch of pictures from, I think, one of the Toronto events. I guess there's still a question on the table of, you know, are we good with those pictures or do we need to schedule a proposal, a photographer? Matt says no. I mean, my only thing is just that, I mean, they're clearly not kitchen table. I don't know if we care about that, but I mean, there's like lots of stuff going on in the background and it's like much kind of bigger groups of people.
Yep.
And so I guess the question is, do we want something that looks a little bit more informal, like homey, parent-kid type of stuff?
I would vote that we definitely do. Like, I think that's the biggest flaw in my mind with the pictures that are up there now. And there's, like, the one of, like, someone getting interviewed and that stuff. Like, I don't think that these – some of them are great. Like, the one of Bieber getting coached is great. But, like, I think some of them are not the real – they're, like – sort of the type of event we're talking about in that they were taken at Mozilla events, so clearly they are in our umbrella. But I think they're not, like, perfectly spot on, or as perfectly spot on as they could be.
I don't have a strong opinion about it. I'll defer to what others. I agree they're not perfect, but I don't think it's a priority. Like, I don't think pictures are our problem right now. So, you know, I'd kind of vote for punting this down the road and maybe seeing what comes out of the WebMaker video series or maybe, like, stills we can pull out of that. But anyways, like I said, I don't have strong feelings about it. I just don't really think it's our communications priority right now.
I guess the thing I would ask is, are we confident that we're actually going to get people to do these test events? Because that actually worries me more, that we're all kind of just sitting here hearing that nobody has done any, including me, so I take equal responsibility. Because I think if we can actually get the test events, it's going to be not that hard to ask people to take some shots of them. So I'm not so worried about professional photographer. I'm worried actually we're not going to test this methodology, and like if none of us will do them, we may be fucked in terms of doing a campaign that works. So I focus on that and focus on us actually doing report backs in the same way that we're going to ask everybody else to do it. And if we can't do that in the next 2 weeks, we should worry. And if we can't get photos out of ourselves from that, we should worry. Because that's what we're asking thousands of other people to do. So I would focus on getting a plan to kick our own asses and our community's ass to go and test the stuff and get some photos from us rather than worry about hiring professional photographers. That's just my opinion.
Yep.
So how do we
and I will sign up to within the next 2 weeks doing kitchen table event.
I did an event over the weekend, and I have two more this week. I'm trying to get photographs of, but I'll send them if you have any. Do you have a place I should put them?
Yeah, because to prototype whatever the report back ask is on the site, even if it's just in the form of a wiki or a blog post. I don't know how we document that so people can do it.
We should just make a Flickr group and have people join it, you know, submit their photos.
So just from a communications perspective, is there a blog post or documentation somewhere just like how to host a test kitchen table event and how to document it?
Yeah, let me find Michelle's email. And there's a wiki page she put up.
Okay. So I can, you know, kind of look to package that up as a blog post and, you know, push it out through our channels and in Tuesday's call, see if we can get more people running test events.
Awesome.
So should we just push through these other communications items, Erin?
Yep. Yeah, sure. Sorry.
The WebMaker video stuff. There's nothing that this group really needs to do. Like we're on track. The first video is gonna deliver first week of May. It's gonna focus on instructors and people teaching kids and adults to be webmakers. So it will make, as we talked about last week, it will make explicit mention of the summer campaign. But I don't think it matters because it's, you know, it's on target. It's in the message box anyway, and we'll just use context to link it to the summer campaign.
And could we ask Thoughtbubble to do a title slide that we could do for an alternate cut at the foot that was like join the summer campaign and just throw it up at the end of exactly the same video?
Sure.
That'd be awesome.
You know, easy to do and shouldn't add any cost.
Sure. Sounds good. So yeah, the main thing is that I think from communications, as Mark mentioned, like just really want to get to polish the partner kit. So Ben, Simon, and I have taken a path in incorporating Mark's feedback from yesterday. There's some additional suggestions for the next iteration from Erin and Jeff, so thank you for those. I guess Ben and I will produce like a version, you know, 0.3, like for tomorrow. So if you have feedback or tweaks, I guess I'm in particular maybe looking at you, Mark. If you could add them into the hopper. And we'll make sure that page is polished by Thursday.
Yeah, and I would just say, like, if other people are reading it, I'll look at it today. I think and you guys may have nailed it already since yesterday, but the really critical thing is we need to have a super concrete, simple version of the ask that I can read it and in 10 seconds understand what the partner ask is or what the event organizing ask is. So if people... I know Erin had some really good, crisp language yesterday. You know, if you look at it and you think you've got a crisper version of the ask, then throw it in there as a suggestion.
Yeah, and also I'm not seeing it on the page right now, but there is a, like, there's here are the ways to partner that we've had in there before. which is being pointed out a couple times in the Etherpad. So I'm not so sure that went, but that's supposed to be in there.
I'm not sure what you mean, Ben. Do you mean, like, how do we get started? What's the next step? Like, that's...
Yeah. Like, I'm just not seeing that now.
It's there. I mean, yeah, so just, I mean, really quickly,
oh,
this,
yeah.
There's two things,
like, I mean, the thing
Mark,
is, I think...
Go ahead. I'm sorry, I was just going to say that, like, in terms of everybody, the consistent piece of feedback is be more specific. So I think we still need help with that. So there's two ways we're going to try and tackle that. One is in the what's already planned section. This was a suggestion from Mark, which I think is a good one, which is, like, say what the other partners are doing. So Mozilla is going to be doing X. Ladies Learning Code are going to be doing Y. Young Rewired State will be doing Q. So let's add partners and give crisp one-liners about what people are doing as part of the campaign. And we need help with that. We don't. Ben and I don't actually know what Ladies Learning Code are doing or Young Rewired State are doing. So if you know that, if you could add it to the pad, that'd be helpful. But the other thing is, like, what's the next step? Like, how do we get started? And so far, I think our asks, they're, you know, they're better than they were, but they're still kind of thin. Like, we're basically saying, like, get in touch to let us know what you're planning. Participate in the June 23rd Day of Action. Add your events to our website and map, and spread the word to your community. So, like, if there's stuff that's missing from that list, it'd be great if people could, you know, point us at it in the pad.
So what I'd have in mind, which I thought was there and is missing, is the sort of explicit elucidation of the different levels isn't quite the right word, of partnership, right? The idea that, like, you know, you can partner by super plugging in, you can partner by just, like, telling people about the events broadly and about the campaign broadly, or you can do a, you know, there's like a middle step, but sort of actually outlining the ways you could do something that is partnering.
Right.
Which I have seen written down.
Yeah.
We talked
I guess
about
the feedback from Mark was that was too vague, like,
generic.
Okay.
And generic. Like,
that could be a Kickstarter campaign for anything. That could be a climate change campaign, like, What are you actually asking me to do that I can imagine right away? Like, Aaron said something yesterday, like, I don't know, I can't even remember what you said. It was so simple.
Create missions around your content and run events on the Day of Code.
Right.
The Day of Code, that's good. Is that what we're calling it?
I don't know. Yeah, what you're telling me.
Weekend of Code.
I think the only thing that... So I think that's, like, those are the partners that we're working really close with. I guess the only thing we were talking about last week where the levels come in is that might be too big of a barrier for some people, and that some people might already be doing stuff and they just want to promote their stuff on the Day of Code.
And the thing is there's a third thing, which is that some people might not do anything, might not have it in their power in any way to do events, but are going to promote our stuff.
Yeah.
And, like, that's actually a pretty, I think, promising, like, level of, you know, like, set of people, of groups. And so I want to make sure that we have stuff in here that they can feel welcomed by.
But the thing is, like, it's like any communications, right? If you try to include every audience and every possibility, then you're talking to nobody. So I think we need to find something that in the lead talks to the biggest group of people we want to motivate, whether that's like running our missions or running their own or whatever. And then you want to follow with examples that show how it's richer than the narrow interpretation of that tagline. And that's where saying, like, Ladies Learning Code is doing two summer March break camps, okay, well, all of a sudden that's a camp, and it's not on the weekend of code, so I get it. Or, you know, Young Rewired State is doing a week-long thing for a whole class of kids to teach them to code. Not on the day of the thing. It's not just at my kitchen table. I get it. So I think that, like, we need something that is viral and transmissive to the largest audience and is specific about the kind of thing we're trying to do. And then you need to unpack it from there.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I'm not the communications expert, so it just still feels like we're too generic and too inclusive.
So line 68, what do we want partners to do? If there's something that's missing from that list, like, let's add it. So Aaron, you're
create missions around your content, for example, is a good one. Anyway, so thanks for that feedback. Let's make that our number one priority, is just, you know, really crisping up and clarifying what we want partners to do.
Great.
For communications, other than to say that Chris Appleton's flyer is posted to the wiki in line 84, so if people are looking for you know, some printable collateral that they can use at events, it exists and is shareable there.
And is that the sort of sneak peek into the branding for it?
Yeah, I guess it's sort of a first pass. It was put together for the JS conference that was happening yesterday and today. So it was put together pretty quick, but just, yeah, sort of starting to play off in some different themes of, like, summer camp and making and hacking and sharing and stuff like that, using some icons from camping and stuff like that. So, yeah, if you guys have feedback on that, it'll probably evolve a little bit in the next iterations with more campaign materials. But, yeah, feel free to comment on the initial path there.
I love that the icon for hack is an axe.
Yeah, you got it.
I
really like it. I was wondering if there's going to be some sort of asset component from that will be like, that we would be able to plop onto different kinds of web offerings. So, for example, like on the missions, if we had something that was like, whatever it said, like a summer campaign, like a little kind of ribbon or something like they have on GitHub, or something that other people can download and put onto their own site, like a badge, not using the real word of badge, but like a, you know, something that can be embedded onto people's sites to say they're participating. Is that in the works or a plan?
Sorry, Jess, what was the question?
So, like, on a lot of the campaign sites, they have things that you can, any user can download to say that they're participating in the project. You know, like a badge or something that they can put on their own website, or something that we can put on our, on different assets, like on the, if I make a mission, if we had something that said that it was a, you know, this mission is part of the Summer of Code, you know, or camp, whatever, Summer Code Party, you know, something like that. Is that part of the plan?
That's a good idea.
It's not on the tactics list. Doesn't mean it can't be. I'm not sure about the, on the list of things people actually do versus the things that marketers dream up. I don't know how close it sits on the spectrum towards QR codes versus, like, actual things people use, but I think it could be a useful tactic.
I think even just for our own assets, like for our own offerings, like the five missions or whatever we do, it would be nice to have something that unifies it to the event.
Sure.
I mean, it's just kind of feeding off of the Project Red stuff that Mark had presented before, you know, where there's something about the branding or there's that other people can use, and it sort of ties everything together without taking away from the core branding.
Yeah, it might be good to put together some examples of, like, some of those things where the badge or the ribbon might be applied. So whether it's the missions or blog posts or just to get a sense of the different types of materials, and then you can figure something out that would kind of apply across a variety of them.
Okay. Cool. So moving on to partnerships, I think we already talked about clarifying the ask. Then the one thing I think to talk about is just how we want to manage all of this. I know that we're driving a lot of people, at least from the website, to Ben. So there's one thing about just how Ben manages everything, but then I know, like, Mark's talking to some people, Michelle Levesque talking to some people, so how should we centralize this so that we all are sort of on the same page? It looks like Ben has some ideas in here. Google Docs spreadsheet,
yeah.
Or, yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, like, what could be the easiest is just to do, like, a Google Docs spreadsheet with who the potential person is, who is, like, the lead from our end, what they've talked about doing, you know, what context may, you know, status and stuff that we're just updating there. If we think that's too ad hoc, it probably makes sense to try and move into using Jeffrey's, the CRM stuff that Jeffrey's set up. I don't know if folks have thoughts on either of those.
I guess I would back up a little bit and maybe propose, Ben, that you and I come back, or you and I and Aaron, but you and I are listed as being on point for partnership, with a kind of partner architecture for next week. Because I think we're kind of talking about some apples and oranges under the same heading and the same fruit basket, in that there's an urgent need to have title sponsors or title partners or whatever, like the British Telecoms and the Tumblrs of the world. And I suspect that's mostly on me, although if there's anybody else who can help do that, I sure would love your help, even suggestions. And that's high touch, and we can manage the information, and it's not hard. And then the other question, which we don't need to discuss now, but I'll just throw it out in case anybody wants to help Ben and I think about it, is if 1,000 ladies learning codes decide they want to be partners and we're popular, what's our offer to them, and how do we manage them? Because at that point, it's got to be automated. And so I don't yet have an opinion on that, but my guess is, you know, the fully manual thing, or even Jeffrey CRM, requires still a full kind of medium touch interaction. Whereas the question is, you know, can you be a partner at a much lower touch, more automated level? And I don't know.
Yeah.
I haven't talked through what we estimate the volume is, all those kind of things. So, Ben, I'm happy to talk to you about that.
Okay. And I also have some thoughts on potential partners that we should be thinking about based on conversations I had with folks in D.C., and I'll send those around later today.
Yeah, if you want to just set up a call with Mary, and we can talk tomorrow or Thursday.
Okay.
Great. Any other questions about partnerships or things that we need to be thinking of for partnerships?
No, just the ask, and which we've already talked about.
Yep. Okay, Beth, do you want to give a quick learning update?
Sure. So we've been working, the mission team has been working closely and really trying to figure out the scope of the project, and essentially we have it boiled down to three kind of staggered milestones so that we can produce the summer campaign's beta. And the first one is really short. It's on May 4th, and the goal is to basically have one kind of kitchen-themed mission and the hackable template so that people can make their own missions. And then following that, we're trying to set up 4 user tests. The one in New York, I'm going to talk to, and I see Lainey's on the phone, but my plan is to talk to you and Chris at some point today about working with the Hive to create one. And then Laura's going to run one in Berlin, and Chloe's going to run one in London, and Carla is hopefully going to manage the one that is going to be the online user test. And so from there, we're going to work towards the Nesta event to really have a few more pre-baked missions, as well as like a more refined hackable template so people can make their own missions, and also so we can test out how the missions are going and see what kind of missions people come up with and what we do when we populate our missions, when we start populating missions. And so if you go to line 103, you can see where our thinking is with the design brief and the scope of the tool. We're really still trying to figure it out, and hopefully by the end of the week we'll have a real defined project scope. And we're actually having our kind of more finalizing call tomorrow morning to do that. But I made after doing some of my initial beta tests, I was testing at the kitchen table in my own house. I made a prototype on line 104 of an invitation somebody could send to a kitchen event, and then I realized that other event organizers could hack that to make their own event. So one, I got a few emails from different people in the beta testing groups that tried it out and found it useful. But two, I had the realization that this could then be, this could actually be the beginning of what could be one of our missions if we layer on top of that some more learning and some different kinds of elements. So it's just like the beginning of an idea there on line 106. I'll just stop for a second in case anyone has any questions there.
No. Yeah, so, I mean, my one question was on line 112, was just, so we're obviously building the missions and the model for other people to build missions, and so we can offer that model for partners, but there might be some, and I'll let Ben and Mark Wayne here, but there might be some partners that kind of need our help building some of these missions for their content, too. And so I guess that's just maybe we just have an open line of communication with you, Jess, on if there are partners we need to handhold to help them create some missions.
Yeah, I think we should do that, but I think it would also be nice if we made a few partners, like high level, who would be really awesome to have missions on. You know, maybe some members of the Hive, maybe some, we're definitely going to have some outcomes from NESTA. It would be awesome to have, you know, a few seated in there so that when we present it on the event, you know, on the summer weekend of code, you know, like we have a nice, mix of different kinds of missions in there.
Yeah.
And I guess one question, but I agree, Jess, I think that's a good idea. And it may be, that might be an incentive for some of the larger kind of title sponsors we're talking about, is that we would help them somehow with that. Like, I wouldn't want to do it with 20 or even 10, but maybe like 5. Like, for example, you know, could we have a mission that's focused on editing the CSS of your Tumblr template? And so I guess the question I would throw for you and Aaron to think about together is, like, how far you would want to go with that offer, or, like, how many or what the actual offer is, because I'm sure that it'll actually help if we can do that for a couple of those folks.
Yeah.
But I don't want to offer stuff that is taxing or that you can't deliver.
Yeah.
So maybe you and Aaron can like go away and think about that and get back to Ben and I and we can then decide how to use that in partnership recruitment.
Yeah, that's good. I mean, it'd be kind of ideal if we could figure out a way to tie them to some of our physical user tests if we wanted to also at that
yep.
same time try to get a physical sessions helping people. It would be convenient.
Yeah, well, that, I think that also is a good offer for them, too, right? Like, is we'll get to do the physical user testing.
Yeah, yeah. Aaron and I will follow up with the group and get back to you on that.
Yep.
Are there any partners, like, right now that I don't know of, like, other than NESTA, are there any other confirmed partners?
I don't know. There's some in the list that on the wiki that I think mostly Ben has put there. I don't know who's put them there that seem confirmed that are more our kind of usual suspects.
Those are Michelle, actually.
Michelle Levesque.
Thorne.
Right. Okay.
Okay.
I think the ones in the wiki, like, there's two classes. There's a by country list, and then there's like a other people to contact list. I think the by country ones are real.
Yeah.
But Michelle would have to vouch for that.
Yeah, the bi-country ones are people who, like, have actually expressed interest to us, and I think that the other groups to contact one was put there more as, like, we think these people should be interested. But I don't know if there's been any outreach to them. Although, clearly,
yeah.
There has been. There are some on that list that there has been outreach to.
Right. And there's a bunch of people from the London event, whatever that was, last week, 2 weeks ago, that have verbally said they want to participate. We just have to do a follow-up to sort of clarify what that means. So there's a lot more that will go under the London piece.
Great.
Shortly. But most of those, to your point, most of those people from the London stuff will be involved in the NESTA event. So we'll have a touch point with them there, most likely.
Great.
Yeah, that's great. It looks like a manage, the partners who have signed up on, according to the wiki right now, seem like a manageable group. But I think Aaron and I still need to kind of think through before giving our answer and managing our workflow around the project.
Yep.
But just to update you also on the badges. So right now we define three kinds of badges: as a skill, a participant, and an achievement badge. And right now our Moz badges team is really trying to figure out how to tie those badges to the missions and the kinds of events. And so we're trying this week to get a little bit more concrete, and hopefully we'll be able to report back next week on that.
Yep. And really, again, what we're focusing on right now is defining the, like, types of badges and what the sort of touch points are for those badges, like where the assessment issuing happens. And then, because that's kind of the hard part to come to agreement on. And then we figure also once we get that worked out, it will be easier for partners to plug in badges as well if they want to. And the other piece is that based on Michelle Levesque's feedback, which she's part of the Webmaker badge team, we are really focusing on making those touch points outside of the gallery. Basically we're trying to build all of the badge issuing touch points into what we're calling Open Badger, which is the issuing tool that Chris McAvoy is leading, not building it into the gallery itself.
And part of it is also because we don't really know what the mission, like what the ultimate platform, the mission is going to look like, or the gallery, as Aaron said.
Yeah. But according to Michelle, yeah, there won't, they're most likely, that might be, the gallery might be the piece that that is as simple as possible for the summer. And so we're working under that assumption.
Great. But we did have some ideas in terms of how to prototype badges in like a paper prototyping space for the phase one and phase two deliverables that are connected to the missions. So
yep.
So hopefully we'll have something in the near future on that.
Cool. Thanks, Jess. And Ben, you wrote an end of summer events stuff here?
Yeah. So we've talked from the start about, like, wanting to do these sort of end-of-summer events at Moz Spaces, and I think that it's fine. I don't think we need to spend that much time from the very start worrying about those because, like, the plan is basically do big ones at Spaces we can have control over. But one of the things that I've started thinking about a little bit is how to provide a way for people to participate in that sort of end-of-summer, like, celebration, share-out, show and tell, whatever piece, if they can't be in a city. I haven't really come up with anything great. And I would like, basically, this is just a request for people to think about potential ways we could do like a virtual show and tell. The problem, it's easy to think about how we might do it with like five people, but how do you do a virtual show and tell with thousands of people, potentially? And I don't think we could talk about it now, or we could just sort of have it as a thing to noodle over and maybe talk about it on the Webmaker call next week or something. But I think it's something that we should start thinking about sooner rather than later.
The one thing I would just say, as you think about it, assuming, I don't know if you're the one thinking about it or if Michelle and you are the one thinking about it, are just like, how do you parallelize or massively parallelize? And Gunnar probably will have ideas as well. So, If we were even moderately successful, like how do you have 50 or 100 show and tells that we're not involved in all of them? And if we were really successful, how do you have hundreds of show and tells? Because the point of the show and tell is to feel validation and feel that people have seen your stuff. It doesn't have to be that we see your stuff.
Yep. So it's maybe just like randomized sort of groups that are set up really fast, but...
Yeah, or by time zone, or by locality, or lots of things.
Yeah. It's interesting, at OFA we did, like, state-by-state sort of comment threads during the State of the Union watch party thing. And then I think there, in some of the bigger states, there were subdivisions within the state.
Yeah.
So, like, rather than doing a live stream, you were just talking to people in your area as you were seeing and talking back and forth. The problem, that was through Discuss. The thing with that, though, is that that's just, it's much easier to do with words than with, like, visual stuff.
One thing on the end of summer events, I mean, it seems like this is not like the solution of how to manage them, but it seems like this should probably be part of the built into some of the early conversations with partners as well, like getting them signed up for not just the day of code, but also the kind of the full summer and end of summer type of stuff.
Yep.
Cool. All right. Anything?
Some of the very biggest partners presumably would be able to provide spaces, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Actually host a big thing.
Exactly. Yep. Cool. Anything else that we should talk about or that we should be thinking about?
I guess I didn't really know where to place it, compartmentalize where popcorn learning summer camp goes in all of this. Is it really like, are we thinking of it as a event kind of happening in tandem?
I don't know. I don't know enough about that. I mean, I'm sure we'll tie it in somehow. We've talked about doing some popcorn missions and but I don't know if it's going to be something sort of on the side or something that gets wrapped under the big umbrella.
Yeah, I don't know that much about it other than I know it's like a six-week or something camp.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. I'm sure we'll work directly with them to figure that out.
Yeah.
Cool. All right. Well, it looks like there's several sort of tasks throughout the all of these awesome notes that people are going to report back on next week. And so we will plan on meeting at the same time next week and touching base in the meantime. So thanks, everybody.
All right. Yes. Hi.
There we go. Welcome, Kate, by the way. I haven't said welcome, Kate.
Yeah, it's exciting to be here. I figured I'd listen to what you guys were talking about.
You should.
Help piece all the pieces together.
Yeah, definitely.
That's hard.
There's so much going on.
Yeah.
Have to get the whole picture.
Yeah.
Yeah, all right. So, yeah, but it's exciting. I'm excited. I'll be here for a while. So.
I know. It's good. We're excited about that.
Yeah.
Thank you. Please stand by.